Zamata Tangsimunya. I'm Alan Halliwell, and this is Season 4, Episode 12 of Indo-Techno. Now, a substantial 87% of Indonesia's population, or 190 million people, live in rural communities. While some of the country's leading ride-sharing, food delivery, e-commerce, and fintech platforms can share success stories in serving these rural markets, the vast bulk of their value add remains more readily evident in the urban markets such as Jakarta, Surabaya, and Bandung. Today's guest, Brian Manafe, has a singular focus on rural commerce in Indonesia. He co-founded Dagangan 4.5 years ago, a company which seeks to empower rural Indonesia through its digitalized distribution network platform. Great to have you join us today, Ryan.
Thanks, Alan, for having me here.
You're very welcome. Now, Ryan, the first thing that jumped out at us in prepping for this session was your LinkedIn tagline. You write, quote, "We are orchestrating a values-driven movement to sustainably empower rural Indonesia." There's a lot there. I want to break this up into a couple of questions. First, why the use of the words, quote unquote, values-driven movement?
Yes, it's a values-driven movement. It's not a valuation-driven movement. It's not a story-driven movement. Because I found out that probably many people build a startup to be a decacorn, to be a unicorn. And probably a lot of people go to certain sectors because they feel the story is sexy to attract global investors. But that's not the case with Dagangan. Dagangan is built not to be a merely decacorn or not to attract specific investors. We build to help people. And that has been my passion since the beginning. We are now helping more than 75,000 rural entrepreneurs in more than 20,000 villages in Indonesia. We have covered more than 40 districts and 40 provinces. We put all of these numbers in the impact reports. But at the end, beyond numbers, we really want to see people's life change. We want to see people in the rural areas, like one of our users named Ibu Yuliati in Yogyakarta, that can achieve doubled income after working with us. And I say doubled, it's not about increasing $1,000 per month. It's 200,000, 300,000 rupiah per day, but it matters for her. That's why even in attracting investors, talking with partners, we want to be having someone with the same values.
Gotcha. A values-driven enterprise, not a valuation-oriented startup. Now, that second part of your tagline, sustainably empowering rural Indonesia, I assume now allows us to step into more of a specific discussion of Dagangan. Tell us about sustainably empowering rural Indonesia.
Yeah, it's a good thing to help people, but at the end, we are not a charity organization. We are not collecting donations across the globe to help people in rural Indonesia. We have to be self-sustained in this manner is financially. And to be able to do it, we cannot do it alone because rural market is not easy to crack. That's why we have to work with the related stakeholders that share the same vision. And how we build it, number one, the most challenging thing in the rural areas is the logistics. It's the last mile delivery. For example, if you send product from Jakarta to Surabaya, two biggest cities in Indonesia, the distance is almost 700 kilometers. You only have to pay $1 for every kilogram. But if you try to send product from Tasikmalaya, a rural area in West Java, to Grabak, a rural area in Central Java, the distance is only 300 kilometers or less than half compared to Jakarta-Surabaya. But for every kilograms of products, you have to pay more than three times, which is more than $3. So this is the logistics inefficiencies. And to solve this, we built Hub and Spoke. And to be able to run this Hub and Spoke, we cannot do it alone. We have to work with the local people. We have to work with the government. And we also need backers, investors, and the brands that share the similar values. That's why we have Mongsil on board, because we feel they can help us building the business with these values in a sustainable way.
Understood. I definitely want to get back to that hub and spoke architecture. But broadly discussing rural commerce, we mentioned in some of our literature that Dagangan, quote unquote, exists for tiers 3 and 4. Serving 87% of Indonesia's population and roughly $131 billion of untapped potential. Tell us more about what challenges these markets face and how we address them.
I mentioned a bit about the logistics, and that's why we have to approach this differently. If we rely on the existing 3PL players, or if we try to crack this with only one big warehouse in the island or in the province, it's going to be very inefficient, and it's not going to make the logistic price or logistic costs lower. So I think supply chain is the challenge, and that's why we solve it with Hub and Spoke. And number two, which is equally important, if you go to the rural areas, the people are totally different. In the cities, people are easy to use apps in their daily lives. And if you find an app that's very useful and you want your friends and families to use it, you just send it through WhatsApp. You just send the PDF, you just send the link. But it doesn't work like that in rural areas. They seldom use apps. The only apps they use is probably TikTok and a bit of WhatsApp and Facebook. And why they use it? Because their families, the people they are trusting, the people they know, are using it. Digital literacy is one of the challenges as well. And the way you solve it is not through PDF or WhatsApp broadcast. It should be through the human connections. That's why the local influence is very important. Last but not least is the support from the other parties, in this case, from the brands. To crack the rural market is not only our objective. It's also the objective of a lot of brands and producers. So we need to find out how to work together with them, how we can give value add with them. And in return, they also can support our operation. Can be through the logistic, can be through the campaign, etc.
Wow, a very stark point you made about these massive asymmetries in app usage between city dwellers and those in the rural markets. Now, we are clearly not the only startup in this broader space. And moreover, a lot of very promising entrepreneurs have found success quite difficult to achieve here, maybe because of monetization of rural MSMEs or small and medium-sized enterprises is difficult, or that the digital literacy, like you just mentioned, of this group of users is not very strong. First, remind us, where have been the biggest points of failure amidst our peer group of competitors in this space?
So I think, Alan, if you want to serve rural market, you have to go all out, right? Because that's where the biggest value added you can give. What I meant is, if you say you are covering rural areas, but what you serve is Greater Jakarta or Greater Surabaya, you don't really solve the problems. Because at the end, the products are still can be distributed with $1 per kilogram. Using the same logic, if you say you serve rural areas, but then you don't really go to the jungle in the middle of the mountains and rivers in the Central Java, West Java, and East Java, then the brands and producers will not see the value add that you give to them. And if they don't see the value add, then of course, it doesn't make sense for them to support you. At some point, it becomes very dangerous for them to support you, because if you're still operating in the cities or nearby the cities, you're probably cannibalizing their existing distributors. And that's the last thing they want, because the distributors have worked with them for 20 years, 30 years, or probably also owned by the same families. So if you want to go rural, you better go rural. However, I also understand some of the startups are reluctant to really go all out to the rural areas because of the last mile logistic challenges. They probably prefer the easiest way, which is trust and subcontract the last mile logistics to the 3PL, which is very challenging if they serve the really rural areas, because most of the 3PLs are not covering the really rural areas yet. Or they have to pay with very expensive price, selling daily necessities with a very thin margin, and then you have to pay a very expensive logistic cost. So it doesn't make sense. That's why most of them choose to go back to the cities or just operating nearby the cities.
Interesting. Now, Ryan, we mentioned that Danggangnan's hub and spoke model led to 10 times deeper penetration compared to other players. What business architectures do our competitors use?
Yeah, so if you look at the logistics processes, there are three parts, right? The first one is the first mile, meaning the flow of the goods from the factories, the manufacturers, all the way to their official distributors. The second one is the mid mile, which is the area distributors to the transit warehouse that the startups are using. And then the last mile, from the transit warehouse all the way to the users or the buyers of the startups. So there are some approach that are available out there. Number one, you trust everything to 3PL. So all the way from the first mile to the last mile, or mid mile to last mile, handled by 3PL. It's going to be very costly if you serve rural areas. But if you serve cities, you better do it rather than building by yourself, because you cannot achieve the economy of scale that the existing logistics already achieve. Now, the second one is the centralized logistics. You probably don't trust all to the 3PL. You handle it by yourself, but you only build one big warehouse for the whole province. It's also a bit difficult in my point of view, because we are not Singapore. If you're Singapore, we can build one big warehouse cover the whole islands. You can see highway here and there in Singapore, or probably in China. I went to China, even in the rural areas, there are highways with 5 layers of road. But it's not happening in Indonesia. So if you only use one warehouse to cover one province of Indonesia, that is probably 10 times bigger than Singapore, then the logistics cost will be costly. That's why we feel that the best approach is building hub and spoke.
Great. So I want to stay on that topic. I think we claim to have roughly 52 hubs across Java. What exactly is a hub? Can you explain it to us in layman's terms?
Yeah. Because we work directly with the brands, I will connect with my previous explanation about first mile and mid mile. We don't have to care about the first mile and mid mile because we are supported by the brands. The brands will take care of the first mile and mid mile together with their distributors. We only need to cover the last miles. So we built micro fulfillment centers that is connecting the area distributors that is typically located in the capital city of the province to our users that is located deep in the rural areas. So we built one hub or one micro fulfillment centers for one sub district. In Indonesia, we call it one kabupaten, right? And then we built a hub. So from the area distributors, they can transit the products in our hubs. And then we take care of the delivery, the last mile of the goods from the hubs all the way to the users. Now, what hubs look like? It's basically a big houses, one of the biggest houses in the rural areas probably, or the, one of the biggest shop lot or small buildings that is owned by local entrepreneurs, local rich guys, and we work with them. We plug our warehouse management system that is already connected with the brands and distributors. And from that, it's just happened.
Understood. I have to say, it sounds like a pretty ambitious physical network. What physical infrastructure and CapEx do we need to deploy to realize a successful hub and spoke system?
So the beauty of this model is if you go to the rural areas in Indonesia, there are already businesses running. There are a couple of examples of the families in the rural areas, the richest one, the entrepreneur's family, that send their kids to Australia or even US for schools. So they have money and the economy is already moving. So what we are trying to do is not building the new one, but leveraging the existing ones. So rather than buying warehouses or renting warehouses, we can just work with the existing warehouse owners or properties, businessmen, and then use their idle buildings, plug in our warehouse management system. Probably if you say CapEx, we just need to buy a laptop because our warehouse management system needs a laptop to operate. And probably some small racking if needed. Fleets are also there, available, owned by the local entrepreneurs. We typically do crowdsourcing. So we combine a couple of local entrepreneurs owning fleets and then work together with them, all regulated in our warehouse management system, or we call it WMS. And WMS is something that is really differentiating us with the others, because the others typically only build and focus on the user transaction apps. But for us, user transaction app is only one small part of the business.
Understood. Now, I assume the economics of the rural market can be quite challenging in tiers 3 and 4. For instance, obviously our end consumers have relatively little to spend compared to their counterparts in the big cities. What are we doing that has made our business model economically viable?
Actually, talking about the margin itself or the price difference between the people in rural and people in the cities is pretty big. And we actually can grab all of those as our margin. But of course, we are a values-driven movement. We are not a profit-driven movement. So we only take a small part of it. However, at the same time, you will see the phenomenon in rural Indonesia that the market, especially the daily necessities and the consumer goods, are dominated by only one or two brands. Because this one or two brands are the oldest one that already built the distributorship and supply chain facilities all the way to rural 20 years ago. But lately, there are more newer brands. It can be local brands. It can be multinational companies. They are building products that are cheaper to penetrate the rural areas as well. And they need help. So we help them. And then to intensify what we are doing for them, they give us this thing called back margin. So the way we monetize or the way we making sense the economics of business is not only relying on the front margin, but at the same time, you're also getting this big back margin. This back margin can be acquired by us if we help them increase the coverage, increase the number of buyers or outlets that are buying from the rural areas, and most importantly, data analytics.
So I wanted to get back to this comparison of tiers one and two and our focus on tiers three and four. You compare how a number of competing solutions actually really only work in tiers one and two, given that those markets have one, density, two, usually a higher level of tech savviness, and three, superior connectivity. But my understanding is we regard tiers three and four actually as more profitable. Can you give us some hard numbers supporting that assertion?
Yes, Alan. I'm going to start with the UniFirst numbers. The UniFirst numbers is the TAM, total addressable market. And when I say TAM, it's the total market of Indonesia household expenditures. We're talking about $174 billion yearly. And $131 billion out of this market, which is 75% of this market, are happening in the rural areas. Now, if you look at the numbers in the cities, you still get big numbers, which is around $43 billion. And then it's concentrated in only five cities. So one city is probably more than $5 billion. But then what people typically forget is the players are also a lot. And in this sector specifically, the value add they can provide is also very minimum. So yes, it's $5 billion plus per year per city, but then considering huge players and minimum value added, it's super difficult, I would say, to monetize a business. Meanwhile, if we're talking about rural areas, we're talking about $131 billion. And honestly, there's no one that is really focusing on that other than the traditional players. Most of them are associated with one or two brands that is dominating the rural areas. So the value add is also very big because there are a lot of brands beyond these two brands that want to penetrate rural markets, and there is very minimal players penetrating this rural market. The numbers work, $131 billion, only one, two big players, and these one, two big players are serving the current one, two brands dominating the markets. There is opportunity for a new player helping the other 20, 30, 40 brands to enter the rural areas.
Very solid case study in microeconomics there. Now, Ryan, there were a few people who recommended that we bring you on to the Indotechno podcast, not just because of your success with Dangangan, but also owing to your background. I wanted to indeed shift to a little more of a personal discussion and your past achievements. Your single largest professional stint was with Sun Energy. Could you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah. So Sun Energy is the first solar energy company in Indonesia that focuses on CNI. Commercial and industrial. So back then, 2016, 2015, a lot of people outside the country start introducing Indonesia with the concept of renewable energy. And the simplest one is solar energy. But the problem is back then, people see a lot of hurdles and challenges because they only limit the application of solar energy to the utilities, meaning providing electricity for everyone. But then economically, it's tough because solar energy only produces electricity during sunlight or daytime. Compared to coal, which can produce electricity 24 hours and cheaper, of course, it's not a sexy option. However, what we found out is there are a lot of factories having a very white roof and they already have electricity. So what they're looking for is cost saving. So we put solar panel on top of their roof, not as the main source of electricity, but then it can subsidize them throughout the daytime, especially when the sun is very hot and shining very bright, right? So I think that's the concept that we bring to Indonesia because back then, everyone is doing utilities. And now, why Sun Energy? My passion, I used to be in a semi-military high school and then I work for the government. And I feel Sun Energy can bring me back to my dream because Sun Energy bring me to a lot of remote areas where these factories are located, where the mining and plantation industries that use our service are located. And that start giving me the ideas of Dagangan.
Yeah, I can see the common threads there. Now, shifting on to another topic relating to what everyone's talking about, the funding winter, No one would debate that the fundraising environment in Indonesia has gotten meaningfully more difficult. What has been your experience raising funds?
It is always difficult, right? Especially for a values-driven startup, not a valuation-driven or story-driven startup, right? A lot of VCs back then misunderstood us because they will compare us with other startups that have similar stories or similar tractions. Thank God we got Mongsel. I think they see how we are different because we fight for the values that they're also believing in. And I think when they invest in us, it's not only about the values, they also can help us to figure out whether what we are doing is already the best way. And when I say what we are doing, it's not only about building the business, but also preparing the growth plan for the business, including the fundraising. And I would say what happened lately is a blessing in disguise because probably from now on, the numbers or the hype of valuation-driven and story-driven startup is not as big as before. People shift to more sustainability-driven company, which is something we already did for forever since day one. So I think that's also pretty helpful for us when we pitch and we tell our story to potential investors. And I feel like as long as the investors share the same values and agree on the approach we are using, then it should be not a big deal.
It's encouraging to hear. Now, Ryan, what scale do we want to grow to at Dagangan by, for instance, the end of 2024? And what are the biggest do or die strategic initiatives we have in front of us? Is it key new features? Is it new market penetration, et cetera?
Yeah, so I think this business will not be able to survive without the support from existing shareholders, stakeholders. And the stakeholders can be investors, can be government, can be local people. But one of them that is playing a pretty important role, especially in the profitability, is the brands. For them, I think what is very important is number one, coverage. Number two, understanding their customers. Now, talking about coverage, we are still only in Java Island and not 100% covering Java Island. So I think what is going to be important in 2024 is increasing our coverage. Of course, it's Java Island, but if it's possible, we want to go beyond Java Island because that's how we can add value for our brands, our stakeholders. And on top of it, they want to understand more. Currently, we already tell them who are buying from them, what they are buying, what products their buyers typically buy together with their products, the behavior and the geographical and the psychographical of their buyers. So we want to build more integrated data platform that we can provide for them. So it can be very helpful for them to develop the products as well as launching suitable marketing campaigns for each area, for each product.
Understood. Now, I've really appreciated your candor and transparency in talking about the pretty formidable challenges of operating in these rural markets. How do you personally deal with challenge and failure as the leader of a startup?
Lately, I learned a lot about meditation, mindfulness, and I listened to some of the coach that do podcasts. One of the big fan of Jim Quick. He's a brain coach and doing podcasts as well. I feel like at the end, life is a journey. And my life is not only Dagangan, it's not only Sun. I have family. I have personal missions to do. So challenge and failure cannot be measured based on a specific company or specific project. It has to be measured by the end of your life, whether you achieve your personal life mission or not. And the way you do it is see everything, either it's challenge, failure, or success as a learning. And whether you can come out of it as the better person, as the person that is ready to go pursuing your goals or to be closer to fulfilling your mission.
I now really understand why a couple of the admirers reached out to advocate you joining this podcast. I appreciate you sharing your philosophy. I wanted to wrap up with something maybe a bit lighter. Ryan, what is your version of an ideal weekend?
Wake up a bit late, do longer meditation, and then playing with my son without have to worry. I have to stop at specific time for a Zoom meeting. And then running with my two dogs. Cute, but a bit stupid dogs.
That's awesome. I have one cute, very cute, but sadly, very stupid dog. She's wonderful, though. So Ryan, thanks so much for sharing with us the latest and greatest that we're throwing at bringing Indonesia's rural consumer into the digital age. And I personally want to thank you. you shared with us an incredibly clear discussion on the various types of logistics serving rural markets that I haven't heard before on this podcast. So as a student myself, I always want to call out the learnings that I come away with. So thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, Alan. Look forward to another podcast to talk about meditation, self-improvement, and probably dogs.
I want to take all three of those topics offline as soon as possible, maybe over a coffee, because I think there's a big technology transfer from you to me. And yeah, we'll have to set up another episode to discuss. We hope our listeners have enjoyed today's episode. As always, please consider sharing any feedback that you have about the Endotechno podcast with us. Terima kasih. Sampai jumpa lagi.